everybody, welcome to Creature Feature, the show where we explore the consciousness of humans and animals and get all scrambled up like Jeff Goldblum in The Fly. I'm Katie Golden. I studied psychology and evolutionary biology at Harvard, and I fight for avian rights on Twitter. Today on the show, we're exploring the seven deadly sins. A theme of this show has been the differences between humans and the rest of the animal kingdom. And what could be more human than our faults? Our pride, wrath, sloth, greed, lust, envy, and gluttony. But let the species who is without sin cast the first stone. The animal world is guilty of these transgressions in ways that you might not expect. I also want to discuss the science behind these so-called human sins in texts that may not be holy, but are certainly peer-reviewed. Joining me today is Katie Stoll, actor, co-host of Even More News, producer of Some More News, and overall great gal.
Hi! I was like, this is where I can talk now, right? I'm happy to be here. You got all my things right. You got my name right. People might think we have the same name, but we don't.
Yeah, and there's a subtle pronunciation difference. Mm-hmm. So her name is K-A-T-Y.
Yep.
Mine is K-A-T-I-E.
So yours is like a Katie.
Katie. Hers and mine's is like Katie.
Well, I just put some like personality into it, and we put some extra inflection in there, and you really start to see the subtle differences that come out between our two different spellings. What's yours short for?
Catherine.
Mine's Kathleen. See?
Wow.
Big difference.
We're night and day.
I'm thrilled that my parents didn't go with Kathy.
Oh. Or like Karen. Well, Karen's not short for.
What would Karen be short for?
What is Karen?
I think that's just itself.
I'm really sorry. Everyone named Karen. There's
Karenita
nothing.
Or
Karen.
Karenessica. Karenessica. I'm sorry for all the Karens. We're just dismissing your full-fledged
I know.
Names.
We're being really mean. Like, your name is something you're born with. But with apology, I mean, that's true. You can change it. But like, I apologize in advance to every Karen out there, but Karen is a name I associate with like a coworker that doesn't have a sense of humor.
Oh, yeah.
Sort of like it's the same as like a Dennis
for
guys.
It's a punchline name.
Right. And I'm really sorry.
Karen.
Right.
Dennis.
Dennis, Karen.
Yeah.
You came to Casual Friday wearing non-casual clothes. How dare you?
She Karened it.
She Karened it.
Honestly, Kathy kind of has that same connotation,
I
too.
Know.
So thanks, Mom and Dad.
Well, Kathy,
and
I
I'm
think,
sorry to all the Kathys out there. I share a name with you.
It's not your fault. This is it's not your really fault. Kind of unfair that you get that bad rap just because you're a Karen or a Kathy. Kathy, I think you can blame on that cartoon.
You
Kathy.
Sure can. Ack.
Yeah, Ack. The one where it's a middle-aged woman going through life struggles, and it's always like, oh, no. I gained a weight. Oh, no, I want to eat something, but I'm a woman and I'm not
My
supposed to.
My hair's frizzy.
I can't boys.
I can't boys
at all.
Listen, Kathy.
You're on a very familiar basis with the comic strip star Kathy.
Well, we get each other, you see. I relate.
So let's first talk about pride. This may be one of the biggest criticisms launched at millennial and youth culture right now, that we're all a bunch of self-obsessed egoists. Generally speaking, I'm tired of people being criticized for their makeup and fashion choices. If you don't want to wear makeup, rock on, but also wear sunscreen. I think adorning ourselves is, as we'll soon discuss, a very natural and perfectly healthy behavior. But there is a trend I'm genuinely concerned about. It's Instagram perfection. It's a subsection of Instagram devoted to carefully cultivated looks of being perfect with flawless skin, cellulite-free bodies, impossibly slender torsos, or perfectly circular butts, often achieved with Photoshop, Facetune, or careful photograph angles. The insidious thing about Instagram, say compared to advertisement, is that it's often carefully crafted to seem candid. Sometimes models or celebrities will post no makeup selfies, though they're still apparently wearing eyelash extensions, photo filters, and foundation. I'm worried this will give young people unrealistic expectations that they're supposed to look naturally flawless. So I looked into the research. There's a Flinders University study that examined the effects of viewing Instagram selfies on body image. The researchers found that when participants viewed the Instagram profiles of celebrities and peers, they experienced increased body dissatisfaction and a more negative mood. This only worked when viewing selfies. There was no such effect when viewing travel images. Also, there wasn't a significant difference in effect when viewing celebrities versus peers. This sounds pretty dystopian, and I'm sure there are people out there who blame the darn millennials for being too self-obsessed, but I'm not so certain it's this generation who is to blame, or last generation, or even the generation before that. Actually, I think body image is deeply entrenched in our evolutionary history. In fact, even animals far away on the evolutionary tree have been caught trying to keep up their appearances. You know, we might think we have it tough with fashion, mm-hmm. but if you will, join me on an imagination journey.
Oh, I'm ready for this.
imagine if, like, the fashion police were real. Mm-hmm. So if you didn't dress yourself well enough, like, they would arrest you or even kill you. Mm-hmm. So, like just totally dystopian.
Yeah, dystopian, horrible. Yeah. Horrible. Yeah,
horrible. And so, like, if you wore socks with sandals, which I'll admit is not a good look.
Not a good look, but
it's comfortable.
Sure. There have certainly been times when I've wanted to wear socks with sandals.
Right, right. Well, not the thong sandals that go between the toes, because that's just, you're a maniac.
You're setting yourself up for failure.
Right, right.
But, like, with your Birkenstocks, say.
Yeah, Birkenstocks
and socks.
Those
are perfect for socks.
Yeah.
I've worn my socks with my Birkenstocks.
I mean, that's perfectly fine to me. But, you know, in this society, like, if you did that, you would be just summarily executed.
Yeah, I should, in the fantasy society, right. Not the current one. I would be ostracized, perhaps.
Right, right. But, you know, like, we're projecting maybe 5 or 10 years in the future where this will be the reality.
Okay, so I need to prepare for it.
Right, right. And, like, if you mix silver and gold jewelry, you're sent to gulag. Yeah. And mm-hmm. You know, actually, I found out why we don't mix silver and gold jewelry.
Why is that?
So you're supposed to wear jewelry that matches your skin undertone. Mm-hmm. And apparently you have, like, a cool undertone or a warm undertone.
Yes, yes.
And, like, silver goes well with cool undertones and gold goes well with warm undertones. And that's, like, if you wear both, like, at least one of them is going to be wrong for your skin tone. And if you do that, like, you're just going to look hideous.
You're going to look whack. No one's going to ever love you.
Yeah, it's just going to, you'll have failed as a
human. They cancel it out. Cancel each other out.
Yeah.
And all you see is awful.
Yeah, like, if you wear a, like, gold earrings and, like, a silver necklace, like, when people look at you, they can't make out what you are. It's sort of like you're just this shifting image of, they're like, I'm not sure if you're pretty or, like a Cthulhu beast.
Yeah, like, I can't get a vibe on your undertones.
Right.
So I don't even know who you are anymore.
Right. Well, so I bring this up because in the animal kingdom, good fashion sense can actually save your life.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So first I want to go under the sea.
Okay.
I'm not going to say the lyrics to the song. I was going to do a cute thing where I was going to say those lyrics to that song.
That really goes well.
It wouldn't go well, but because of a certain powerful group.
We put that out there. You guys all know what we're talking about.
Right, right. You get
so
it.
Let that be stuck in your head.
Singing sea creatures. Just imagine a generic off-brand singing.
Yep.
Anyways, decorator crabs adorn themselves with decadent jewelry found in their environment.
Really?
Yeah, so little bits of kelp or seaweed and even beautiful living jewelry like anemones, sponges, and bryozoans, which are these invertebrates that kind of look like eyelashy, flowery things.
Ooh, creepy.
They're very pretty.
Oh, pretty.
I think they're creepy pretty.
I have a prejudice against things under the sea.
Yeah.
They scare me.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I'm sure it's beautiful.
Do you have, like, lassophobia or the thing where it's like the fear of the depths?
Kind of. I mean, I've never had that diagnosed, but it makes me very nervous. It might be that my mom told me that I would drown if I went in the ocean when I was a kid.
Well, she's half correct.
She's half correct.
I'm afraid of swimming in the ocean, but I'm not, like, afraid of the animals inside.
I am specifically getting in my head about the animals underneath the water. But that's not what we're here to talk about. We're here to talk about pride.
But these are so cute. These are fancy,
I'm sure they're cute.
Proud little
I'm just
crabs.
Gonna picture them in the animated way.
Right, in a generically animated way.
Generically
not,
animated.
Nothing specific.
No.
So they put on a really bold look. Like, if you look at these decorator crabs, they're very fancy. And their outfit kind of depends on their environment. Mm-hmm. So it's whatever is around them so that they can create this natural camouflage. And in fact, you can put one of these crabs in a fish tank. And if you put jewelry in the fish tank, they will put the jewelry
on. Wait, that's real cute.
It's super cute. So we watched a video of the decorator crab putting on lace.
Yes,
and
we did.
Pearl beads.
Oh, that was, I mean, listen, absolutely incredible seeing them decorating themselves, but they are horrifying, and I kind of understand why they want to decorate it.
They don't have a great, like, baseline to work with, but they're trying.
They've got, like, a real kind of milky, yellowish color.
Very fuzzy. Well, the reason they look so, like, sort of fuzzy is because they have these little barbs on their body that work like Velcro so that they can stick things on. It'll actually stick. They're called setae.
I mean, oh, setae.
Yeah.
That sounds like some sort of French
I know.
Accessory type thing, a setae style. Yeah, it's very funny seeing these crabs with their jewelry dragging behind them as they scrape along the bottom of the ocean floor.
Working the runway that is just the ocean floor.
They are working it.
Yeah.
You can say that for sure.
Yeah, whatever it is, they're working.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't just found underwater. Assassin bugs will wear their dead prey as trophies.
They wear the skins of their enemy, like a suit?
Uh-huh.
Oh, God.
Well, more like a backpack.
More like a backpack.
Uh-huh. So this is actually to protect them from even scarier predators. So I have a picture here.
Oh, that makes sense.
One of these bugs. It's that big lumpy thing on its back, that's all dead ants.
Dead ants. A pile of dead ants.
Big pile of dead ants is a backpack.
And what was this guy called again?
Assassin bug.
That's not even more specific. It's just a generic assassin bug.
Right. I feel like it starts out strong with the assassin part of its name,
sure.
Where it's like, okay, this is threatening, and then bug.
Yeah. It gives me no clue as to what kind of bug.
It'd be like
a killer bug.
I mean, the bug is called the assassin bug. That is its name. It's just like, bug does seem really generic.
It just, but like, not like a scorpion or
it's a bug. It's a bug. It kind of makes me think of, like, say you have an assassin, but his name is Dennis or Karen.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's like
sure.
The Dennis or Karen of assassins. So they're found in Africa and Malaysia, and one of the reasons that they do this, so they specifically use ants, not any type of prey that they find, because researchers think that this is that spiders, who are potential predators of assassin bugs, mm-hmm. are pretty wary of attacking ants because ants will swarm them. And assassin bugs don't have this worry because they're very specialized for preying on ants. In fact, some of the species of assassin bugs, so feather-legged assassin bugs, which sounds really,
wow,
I know, really fancy. They have a scent that's attractive to ants. So like an ant will wander away from the group, and then they can just kill that one ant and then put it on their backpack.
So they kill them specifically for protection.
Well, no, they eat them too.
They eat them too.
It's a 2-in-1. Like it's a nice snack. And then it'd be like, you know, you go to In-N-Out or Burger King, and then you just put all of your wadded up bags
wrappers on your back to to keep away the boys.
Yeah, keep away. That is, I mean, I think that's a very effective way to keep away boys.
Sure. I mean, it's worked for me, so I do relate to the assassin bug in that regard.
Yeah, it's your fast food camouflage.
Uh-huh. Yep.
They keep away. Can't even see you. Or other camouflage for women is just being older than 40.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
That's when you disappear as a female.
That's when we,
Yeah.
So I should just start killing older ladies and wearing their skin on my back to keep the men away.
I'm legally going to say no.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that, Katie. I'm not going to take your bad advice.
So not all fashion is meant to mask your appearance. Sometimes you want to be noticed.
Mm-hmm, sure.
So bearded vultures will wear makeup to attract mates.
Really?
Yeah. So they rub their heads, necks, and butts in iron-rich soil.
Okay.
That gives them a sun-kissed reddish hue.
Oh, I can relate to that.
Yeah, they get a nice tan.
Always
nice
chasing that tan.
Yeah.
Where do they live?
So they're in Europe, Asia, and Africa.
Okay. Okay.
And they live in sort of mountain areas.
Okay.
And so the reason they want to look tan and beautiful, mm-hmm. is it's like a status symbol. So
sure.
Older, more dominant bearded vultures will have more vibrant colors. Mm-hmm. So if you're young and dull looking, you gotta fake it till you make it.
I like that. I like that they're trying to look older.
Yeah.
I like that they respect their elders in this.
I know, exactly. It's like being mature is not seen as like, oh, you're not pretty anymore. It's like
the older you get, the sexier you are.
Which I think is true, honestly.
For us?
Yeah.
I agree.
Because like the older you are, the more confident you are and the more you understand things. So it's like older people understand how to be a responsible partner better.
Absolutely.
Which is a big turn on.
There's kind of a window. Say after a while it starts to turn. But like, yeah, I agree. I'm much happier now than in my 20s.
I feel like old people are constantly banging, you know?
Banging?
Yeah. What else?
They are. I mean, wasn't this secret rise of STDs like a big thing in different like senior living communities and
whatnot? Because I mean, probably they feel like we're out of danger because we're
so
old.
Hell yeah, they do. I've been good my whole life. Let's let loose and have some fun. My husband's been gone for a while now. I might as well.
I feel like that's really mean of nature to give you STDs when you're 80 because it's like, look.
But like also, do they care?
I don't know if you would care. It's like at that point, it's a
one more thing that's uncomfortable. I don't know. But okay, so these bearded vultures, they want to look older. They rub their butts and shit.
And then they get a nice dirt tan, which I feel like tans are also like a status symbol for people because it's like, I'm so rich. I have time to tan and go to the beach.
Tanning is the luxury.
Yeah. And it will age you prematurely.
Absolutely.
So we're just like vultures.
Bearded vultures.
So we can't end our section on pride without first talking about flamingos. These are the fancy walking pink birds.
Mm-hmm.
And they also like to use makeup. So a bit of pink blush during mating season.
Okay.
And so their feathers aren't always pink. Sometimes they fade to a more white hue after breeding. And one way to enhance that pink color is by brushing a special oil over their feathers that increases their vibrancy. So I know what you're thinking, Katie. Where does this oil come from?
Yes, it was what I was thinking.
Well, if you've been listening to the show, you might already be able to guess. It comes from butt glands.
Butt glands.
It's always butt glands.
Nature's makeup.
So there's a special gland near the flamingo's tail that they rub it on their beaks, and then they just spread it on themselves like flamingo butt jam over some flamingo toast.
That it probably feels pretty good.
Yeah, and it makes them pinker. It makes their feathers more vibrant so that their mates are like, wow, you're beautiful and just glistening with butt juice.
Yuck. No, that's great for them. I'm glad that that works out because they need to get the stuff out of their glands probably anyway.
It's
repurposed.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really like, I mean, we talk about like, you know, natural, holistic makeup, you know, cruelty free.
Yep.
What could be less cruel than getting it directly from your butt glands?
You are the source.
Right, right.
It's repurposing your own stuff.
Really budget friendly, animal friendly makeup.
Listen, I'm not going to take their makeup tips, but I respect them.
I mean, I would be interested to try it.
Okay.
Well, obviously not with my own butt. That would be ridiculous. Like, but with a flamingo butt. But yeah. I'd be chill about it. I wouldn't be like rude and mean about it, but just like, hey, can I try some of that?
Just a bit of warning. It might react differently with your skin than
Right. But you just like you know, like when you're like with your girlfriends, you're like, hey, can I try that like lip tint or whatever?
Yeah.
But with a flamingo and like it would probably try to like peck my face off. Yeah. But you know, maybe not. Maybe not.
You're an adventurous gal. I like it.
For anyone who thinks the current generation is too self-obsessed, sorry, but humanity has been prideful for a hell of a long time. Recently, archaeological evidence off the coast of South Africa was uncovered that found pigments thought to be used as makeup from 164,000 years ago. Jewelry was also found that dates back some 100,000 years ago. Beads made out of simple seashells. It's a big deal in the world of archaeology, not just because the necklaces were fetch, but because it shows humans have been capable of tool use and symbolic thought far longer than originally speculated. We're gonna take a quick break so I can rub some flamingo butt juices on my face to make myself beautiful. We'll be right back. So now we're gonna talk about wrath. Is wrath scientifically quantifiable in humans? Researchers basically set up a lab eBay Participants in the study could bid on an item, and the highest bidder would win the item. But there's a twist. If you won, you only paid the amount of the second highest bid. So this leaves a lot of room for spite. Because here's the thing. Participants get to see who the highest current bidder is, and if they don't want to match that price, they can, at no cost to themselves, increase the second highest bid so the winner has to pay more. So here's an example. You're bidding on a Precious Moments figurine, and near the end, the researchers announce that the highest bid is $200. So your current bid is only $10, and you don't want to pay $200. But you have a choice. You could resubmit your current bid of $10, which would mean you have no impact on the auction, and you don't lose any money, you don't win the prize, but you cause no harm to anyone. But if you're feeling like a real turd, what you could do is bid $199.99, ensuring that the winner of the auction has to pay the maximum amount of money because you're a total asshole. The researchers found that there are indeed a lot of assholes. So 383 out of 768 closing bids were, quote, potentially spiteful. They counted bids as spiteful if they were more than the losing bidder's initial bid and no greater than the current winning bid. Of these spiteful bids, 31% were maximally spiteful, meaning the bidders bid one increment of money under the winning bid. So that example of bidding $199.99 under the bid, just so that the winner had to pay as much as possible. So surely only humans could be so petty. Well, hold on to your opposable thumbs there, because there's an animal that takes spite to a whole new disgusting level. So Katie, you want to go to Imagination Station again?
I sure do.
Toot toot, all aboard the Brain Express. So imagine that you're eyeing like a half-eaten pizza.
Sure.
That you're at like a pizzeria and mm-hmm. someone's like finishing up, they're paying the bill, and they've just left this pizza out.
Been there.
Yeah, and you're like, all right, box it up. But they don't. Katie, they don't box it up.
They just leave it?
They just leave it
they
there.
They just leave it.
And they're about to walk out, and you're like looking at this pizza like, well, maybe I'll eat it then.
I'm hungry for pizza at the moment.
Right, right. I mean, like, also just like, you know, you're wasting food.
Yeah.
And it's a pizza, so it's like not something people's saliva and germs
get untouched.
All in. There's no cooties on it, so it's like perfectly good mm-hmm. food. But the person who's leaving, like, sees you eyeing their pizza.
Oh, yeah.
They unzip their pants, and then they pee on it.
Okay.
Just to, like,
they just mark it.
Yeah, just
say,
to prevent you from eating mm-hmm. that pizza.
Sounds like a real human.
Right. I mean, I think you're catching on to the theme of this podcast. But, I mean, I can't imagine doing something so out of pure spite.
So petty. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, just like peeing on something just to make sure that someone else
doesn't
can't enjoy it.
So would you like lick something to keep someone else from eating it?
I mean, probably as a kid.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
I mean, that's something that kids do all the time. They're like,
I guess they do.
I licked it.
It's mine
now. It's mine. I've claimed
you can't
it.
Have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's definitely a very
yeah.
childlike thing where they don't understand
yeah.
that just because they don't have to keep it for themselves. They don't have to taint
right.
it. They don't have to claim it's
well,
mine.
It's sort of like a food or toy hoarding instinct uh-huh. that you kind of have to be trained not to do. Like, I do
yeah,
remember,
toys.
Like there was a cupcake day at school once, and I was too full to eat a cupcake, ate too many of those goldfish. But I took a cupcake, and I was like, well, to protect the cupcake, I got to lick all the frosting off. You lick all the frosting off, and then you save that. Because the frosting, in my opinion, I know this is controversial, the frosting's the bullshit part. The real part is that cakey goodness.
It's not controversial. Listen, frosting is kind of bullshit, but I kind of think that together,
right.
it goes well. Your cupcake is better for
right.
at least a little bit of frosting.
But as
you know,
a child,
you don't get that.
You don't understand the complexity of multiple flavors combining
right.
on your palate. It's more, I just want this chunk of chocolate cake.
It's more like about no one else having it.
Right,
it
right. Because what happens is when you lick off the frosting off a cupcake, what it leaves is a slimy coat
yeah, you
of
don't
your
want that.
Saliva, and it glistens in a way that's very unappealing to anyone but you. And then I saved it for, you know, and then like I did learn when you lick off the frosting of a cupcake and you let that thing sit there for about half an hour, mm-hmm. It's not great.
That's what I mean. Like, you've ruined it for yourself as well.
Yeah, because there's something, it's funny, because like when you swallow your own spit, happens all the time. It's in your mouth.
I just did it.
It's in your dang mouth.
Yep.
I'm doing it all the time. Happens all the time on this podcast. But if you spit in a cup and then you try to drink it, gross. That's
revolting. What a suggestion, Katie. How dare you?
I know. But it's like once it's outside your body, once it's on that cupcake, you're like, I got a spit cupcake.
Yep.
That's how I learned to not be a Wolverine, was by my gross spit cupcake that...
Yeah, that's like, the thing you had to outgrow.
I spited myself with my own spittle.
Yeah, it's a lesson that you learned, that you taught yourself.
That spite spit came back to bite me in the butt.
But those...
So, Wolverines are the douchey frat bros of nature. They're a large, aggressive member of the weasel family,
actually. Okay, I did not know that.
They're carnivores about the size of a medium dog, and they're on the top of their food chain, so they're not typically subject to predators, and they're extremely aggressive and ferocious. Some of their other names are the skunk bear.
That's cute.
Yeah, so they like to excrete musk from, here we go,
less cute.
Anal glands.
Yep, those anal glands.
There's those anal glands again. Their scientific name is gullo gullo, which is glutton glutton in Latin.
Oh,
gets
fascinating.
Gets two gluttons.
Gullo gullo.
Yeah.
That's cute.
Yeah, like they're like, no, this is so gluttonous, it's gluttonous gluttonous.
Yeah, it's double gluttonous.
Yeah. Double mint Wolverine.
Double mint Wolverine.
There
also,
we go.
Yeah, Wolverine. Yeah, in my mind, it's a fake animal, but it's not.
No, it's not. It's not just a man with metal fingers.
Yeah.
Metal.
Right.
Between finger blades.
Right.
It's an actual animal.
It's an actual animal, not half man, half wolf.
Yeah. Blades. In Romanian, their name means gluttonous badger. So.
Also, I'm guessing they eat a lot.
Yeah. So after they've eaten as much of a carcass as they can possibly gorge upon, they like to pee all over the remnants.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's not actually urine, but like anal gland juices again.
They got a lot of it.
Yeah, we got a lot of butt juices in this episode.
It's probably because of their diet.
Yeah, it's a butt juice heavy episode
here. Can they eat it after they've butt juiced it? Or
No
one can.
Nobody can.
It seems stupid.
And it's not... And like researchers were like, are you marking your territory? And no, it's independent of marking territory. It doesn't seem to have anything to do with being
like,
territorial.
I just don't want anybody else to
have
this.
Because like the wolverines rarely come back to pick over the leftovers.
Okay.
So it's
wasteful.
Yeah, it's just to prevent their competition from eating it.
Okay.
Because this like weird butt pee will spoil the food.
And they don't even really have competition, so it's just like...
Well, they have like competition with other wolverines.
With other wolverines, okay.
And like other predators that will be looking for the same prey animals. Mm-hmm. So even though they are... They
not
don't
threatened
have,
personally,
yeah,
they
right.
do have hatred in their heart for other people.
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
Other animals. I'm sorry, they're not people.
They're not... people, but they kind of act like some people. I know.
I certainly know people like this.
Yeah, yeah. At the school I went to, there was like this statue that everyone would like, tourists would always clamor around because it was like, oh, this cool statue of this famous dude. And there's this tradition where you would pee on the statue just kind of like as a little screw you to all the innocent kids that were posing with the statue.
Sure. Have you ever peed on that statue?
No.
Okay, good.
I'm a good girl. Also, I feel like it'd be easier for a guy.
I was about to say,
it.
It'd be easier for a guy unless it's a summer day and you've got a skirt on or whatever.
Or you get one of those piss funnels, you know?
You could.
Yeah.
I don't know why you would, but you could.
The she pees?
Yeah, the she pee.
Yeah, where it's like, it's one of those plastic funnels that like, they're like, when you're going hiking, you know. But here's the thing.
You know what?
I'm not going to carry around a thing. Plastic
and then,
thing covered in pee.
And then carry it home.
Right.
You know what else is just as easy? Finding a bush and squatting.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like you work your core a little bit, but it's not that hard.
No, it's
bonus
very
points,
easy.
You can grab onto a tree and just like, you know.
Yeah.
Secure yourself that
way.
Get
some balance.
I would rather do that than like carry around a gross piss funnel.
This is probably saying too much, but I genuinely like peeing in the middle of nowhere.
I don't think that's TMI. I think everyone shares that sentiment.
I was in Iceland last year and there's just a lot of stretches with nothing but the most beautiful landscape. And Iceland, I peed all over you. It was wonderful.
You claimed Iceland. Now no one can go there.
Well,
it's mine. It's so your continent.
You all owe me something.
Right.
Every time you visit.
No one else can visit Iceland anymore.
Yeah.
You've ruined it for everyone.
Or I've made it better. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I guess that's... Maybe Wolverines think they're like seasoning the food.
Maybe.
Like they're so arrogant that they're like, this... They're going to like some of my pee on this food.
To be fair, I didn't pee on anything anyone was about to eat. But,
right, right.
You know, I hear you.
Well, if you peed all over Iceland, though, isn't there food in Iceland?
Yeah. I mean, there is. I mean, you're taking me very literally.
I am. Yeah.
All over. I mean, yes, all over. But
right,
not
right.
Like.
No, so I see. It's more like geocaching your
yeah,
pee.
Yeah, it's like every 2 miles.
Right, right, right. Okay, that's a reasonable amount, I think, of urine to deposit on Iceland.
I pee too much.
No, it's all right. That's totally healthy. And I mean, honestly, Iceland sounds like it's made mostly out of water.
I can't.
They're not going to notice.
Yeah. Yeah,
they're not going to notice the difference. It's probably 90% pee anyway.
I bet people have peed before me. People will pee after me.
Yeah, I mean, geologists may disagree with me, but I bet the world's like 90% dinosaur pee at this point. It's got to be.
I'll take you at that.
Right. Dinosaur pee and poops?
Yeah.
It's got to be. Got to be. That is, I'm going to pin my brand on that statement.
I die on that hill, please. Don't die.
So... A human Wolverine, unfortunately not Hugh Jackman, tried a similar tactic when he was romantically rejected by a woman. The worst fate that could befall any living creature, apparently.
What?
So, a Minnesota man, this time it's not Florida man.
Okay, well that's something.
Allegedly, he peed in the water bottle of his coworker after she had turned down his advances.
What?
And... She said she only wanted to remain friends. How absolutely dare she? He may have peed in her water bottle up to 15 times.
That's absurd.
Right.
That is ridiculous.
How do you even...
Wait, so different days.
Yeah, different days.
Different days, or he didn't have very much pee and has a prostate problem.
Right, right.
And needed to, like, keep going back?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was different days, but also, like, either he had really good aim or like a really small apparatus.
Uh-huh, sure.
Like how do you just consistently pee in a water bottle
how
like that?
How do you get your water bottle peed in 15 times? And
she did, like, he was caught because she was like, this water tastes sort of like rejected man baby pee.
Yeah, yeah. This tastes like Greg!
So he was arrested and he denied doing it until the police were like, you know, we can test for DNA, and when you pee in a bottle, that's a lot of DNA. And then after that, he was like, oh, yeah, maybe I did it once or twice or 15 times.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of ways to respond to being rejected. There's one good way, which is like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Thank you for your time.
I'm disappointed, okay. But I respect your opinion. Bye.
Right, right.
Or there's this way.
So we're going to take a quick break, during which I am definitely not going to pee in someone's water bottle. What do you mean? That's an oddly specific thing for me to say. Anyways, we'll be right back.
Okay. Guarding my water.
So, on to our next sin, sloth. I know you think our candidate here is, well, going to be the sloth, but honestly, I think they have an undeserved reputation. Part of the reason they remain motionless is their diet is made up of leaves that are extremely difficult to digest, so their metabolism is very slow. In fact, their metabolism is so slow, they only poop once a week, which is a treacherous journey down to the bottom of the tree. If they were truly lazy, why wouldn't they just poop from up on their tree branch? University of Wisconsin ecologist Jonathan Pauly says, it's like if you had to go run a 5K on an interstate before you could go to the bathroom. Traveling down to the base of the tree to poop is a brave risk, but why do they do it? First, you need to know that sloths host a ton of little flora and fauna in their fur, algae and moths among them. These aren't just freeloaders, the green algae especially, which provides extra nutrients to the sloth. It's absorbed through the skin. And moths provide nutrition for the algae to grow, both in waste matter from the moth's diet and the decaying of dead moths. The moths that hitch a ride on the sloths also lay their eggs in sloth poop. The larva eats the poop, and when the sloths descend to make more poo-poos, the newly hatched moth larva can hitch a ride on the sloth butt Uber back up the tree. So moths lay their eggs in sloth poopies. Sloths descend to the base of the tree to make more poopies. The sloth larva and the sloth poopoos crawl onto the sloth. Nutrients from the moths feed the green algae growing on the fur of the sloth. The sloth absorbs the nutrients from the green algae. The healthy sloth lives to make more poopies, more moths, more algae, and that's the circle of life! But we're talking about sinners here, not beautiful coexistence. To do that, we're going to take a look at one of the most horrifying parasites in the natural world. So, Katie.
Yes.
Time to imagine again.
Here we go.
Imagine that one of your body parts got taken over by a parasite.
Okay.
So, like, I'm trying to think of, like, what would be the worst body part.
Because,
mm-hmm. like, if it was a hand, like in Dr. Strangelove, like, it would always be flopping around, trying yeah. to do its own thing.
I wouldn't love that. It's very visible. But I do have another hand.
That's true.
So there's that.
You could, like, tie down that hand and then use your non-parasite hand.
I mean, what? Yeah, yeah.
But if you had both parasites in both hands, that'd be
awful.
That'd be a problem. Because then
real
it'd be,
problem.
Like, grabbing things and poking people. And,
uh-huh. So the parasite makes my hand do whatever it wants?
Yeah, whatever the parasite wants.
Okay.
And, like, if it was your feet and your legs, that'd be bad.
Be real bad.
Because then it'd, like, walk you over to do weird parasite
I
stuff.
I mean, if the parasite's leading me off to do parasite stuff, I don't want anything to do with that.
I mean, that's kind of like what nematodes do to crickets. So, like, nematodes that infect crickets make them go crazy and the crickets jump in pools of water. So the nematodes can go have gross sex in the water and make more nematodes.
Wow.
Yeah, it's super nasty.
So how do they do that, though?
They infect the crickets and then they... It's like it messes with the cricket's brain.
Sounds like some Hogwarts magic bullshit.
But like if a parasite infected your eyes, that would suck because then it would just look at whatever. Could look at gross butts all day and you'd have no choice.
So that's what, okay. Yeah, I don't want any of this. I don't know what would be the worst part.
Right. But I think for me, the grossest body part would be the tongue.
Oh, yeah. Now that you've put that in my head.
Yeah.
I mean, I was going to some other places, but tongue is.
Yeah. Yeah, tongue, because it's like so intimate. It's like in your mouth.
It's in your mouth.
Well, I got bad news for fish.
Oh, no.
I know.
I'm so glad I'm not a fish.
So there's an isopod called Cymothoa exigua, or what is more commonly known as the tongue-eating louse.
Oh.
It has a pretty self-explanatory name. It's found in many parts of the ocean, even off the coast of California. And it likes to latch onto a fish's tongue and start systematically sucking the blood and using, like, these creepy little claws in front that just, like, scrapes the tongue and then just scoops that blood right into the little isopod's mouth. Yeah. And
when we kill fish and eat fish, is there a chance of that parasite getting into us?
Well, it's not going to attack you because it's very specialized.
I'm not a fish.
Yeah, you're not a fish. It's very highly specialized. In fact, it only attacks certain species of fish. But, like, yeah, fishermen have caught fish, and they find the little louse in the fish's
awful.
Mouth. Yeah. So the fish's tongue atrophies due to blood loss because the little tongue-eating louse has been working away at it in the tongue mines. But it's not done with this poor fish. Now it attaches itself to the tongue stump's muscles and becomes the fish's new tongue.
Oh, no, it doesn't.
It does indeed. It's the only known parasite to replace an entire body part.
They've got small little body part, small little tongue.
Yeah, I guess so. But, like, it's still...
It's very impressive.
It's
I'm
very,
not trying to belittle them.
I mean, it sounds a little bit like you are.
I just was being realistic because I was...
Being
first,
pretty mean to this tongue-eating
I was imagining my tongue, and that's not realistic. That's not
well,
the right size.
Some of these fish can be, you know, you hold it in your hands, it's... Could be, like, a little bit bigger
They've
than,
They've got
like,
a sizable tongue.
Yeah,
it's
like a, not a human-sized tongue, hopefully.
It's like a pinky finger.
Yeah, yeah. You'd think that maybe it becomes the tongue so it can steal food out of the
mm-hmm.
fish's mouth, but no, actually. It's eaten the fish's tongue, so the fish would normally just die, because it's like, I don't have a tongue, I can't eat anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I have a poor fish. But, like, if the tongue-eating louse wants to reproduce, it needs to keep that fish alive a little longer. So by becoming the tongue, it helps the fish continue to eat. because it's going to use the fish as a Motel 6 gross mating area.
This is so evil.
Yes, it's very evil. So a male tongue-eating louse will attach themselves to the gills of the fish, and when the female is mature, they'll swim up inside the fish and mate with her in the fish's mouth.
Ew.
Yeah.
Ew. Ew.
Yeah.
They're all in on it, but it's just the men that do the scraping.
No, it's just the females that do the scraping.
Oh, okay.
So females attach the tongue. They're the ones that suck the blood. And she'll give birth to a brood of live male tongue-eating louses, and they'll swim off to find a new host. And then she abandons ship or fish, and it's just left tongueless and to die after all this horrible sex has happened inside of its body.
It's a real violation of that,
right,
of that fish's life, of his private space.
Yeah, but I bet you're wondering, like, how does this species continue if it only gives birth to males?
Yes, I was thinking that.
That is a good question that I just said that you asked. They're actually hermaphroditic, and so when males attach to the gills of a victim fish, if they sense that there's no female there, one of them's going to become a female.
Okay.
And swim up that fish and attach itself to the tongue so the beautiful cycle can begin anew.
That's wild.
Yeah.
See, I'm standing by my earlier thing about fearful of stuff below the water.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's only going to happen if you're a fish. And actually just a specific kind of fish.
Yeah, but now I know what's happening.
The ones that replace the whole tongue attacks, they're called rose snappers. They're off the coast of Mexico. And those are the only ones that replace the whole tongue.
Okay.
But there are other, like, tongue-eating louses.
Yeah.
Some of them attack clownfish. And, yeah, they're all gross-looking.
Great.
Yeah.
Good to know.
Yeah. I'm afraid of getting a fish and finding that, like, in the fish.
Like you've ordered fish to eat.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I guess because I know about it and knowledge is power, I'll at least know what it is.
Ignorance is bliss.
Oh, but can you imagine not knowing and you just, this fish's tongue has eyes? Like, you know, an alien?
Well,
like,
do you ever eat a fish with a head? And,
I have,
would
yeah.
you eat that? Okay,
yeah.
Katie.
I mean, if you can't look a dead fish in the eye and eat its cheekbone muscles, then, you know?
You're right. I'm never going to eat a fish again.
It's funny because she's a vegetarian.
I am a vegetarian. I do sometimes eat fish.
You're a pescatarian, though.
I've recently tried, but then it's hard for me.
Yeah.
I still think about the animal.
Think about the grossness mm-hmm. of the meat. I can understand that. I have a couple of my friends who are vegetarians. It's the same thing where it's like they would be okay with maybe eating some meat sometimes, but they can't actually deal
yeah.
with the texture of it.
That is 100% why I'm
yeah.
vegetarian.
Well, and I understand that because I can't deal with shrimp texture really well, because, like, to me it tastes like I'm eating a gross marine bug, and I am.
Well, that's what it is.
Yeah. And I, actually, so, like, these tongue-eating louses, they're isopods, and that's related to pill bugs, you know, or I don't know, roly-poly,
yep,
some people
yep.
call them.
I call them both.
Yeah, yeah, those little ones, like, you poke them and they roll up in a ball.
Pretty cute.
Yeah, it's pretty cute. They're like little insect hedgehogs.
So that's what these parasites look like?
Similar, but a lot grosser. They're
sure.
white. They're bigger.
Oh, yep. Nope.
And
but they roll up like that. They have that.
They don't roll
like
up
skeleton.
But they do set. Have that sort of like bendy segmental.
So now I can picture them being a tongue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can.
Yuck. Yuck. Thank you.
Try not to imagine that.
Yeah.
You're not gonna be able to do it. I'm sorry.
Ugh, it's okay. I needed an excuse to not eat fish.
Is sloth truly a deadly sin in humans? Well, there was such a thing as a sleeping sickness, not the kind transmitted by the tsetse fly, but something that is neurological and a medical puzzle. In the early 1900s, a disease known as encephalitis lethargica affected millions around the world, many of whom died as a result. Encephalitis means inflammation of the brain, and lethargica describes the main symptom of the disease, extreme lethargy. Oliver Sacks described the disease hauntingly. Quote, they would be conscious and aware, yet not fully awake. They would sit motionless and speechless all day in their chairs, totally lacking energy, impetus, initiative, motive, appetite, effect, or desire. They registered what went on around them without active attention and with profound indifference. They neither conveyed nor felt the feeling of life. They were as insubstantial as ghosts and as passive as zombies. According to the National Institute of Health, symptoms of the disease included high fever, headache, double vision, delayed physical and mental response, lethargy, abnormal eye movements, upper body weakness, muscular pains, tremors, neck rigidity, psychosis, and coma. You'll notice I'm using the past tense, so I'm sure you're hoping we cured the disease. Well, not exactly. The epidemic ended and has not recurred, but not because it was cured. In fact, we don't know the cause, why the epidemic ended, and what the hell is going on, or if it'll happen again. There have been isolated cases since the epidemic, so the disease is not gone from the face of the earth. The most we know about it is from pathological studies of these rare cases that show inflammation of the midbrain and basal ganglia. Otherwise, it's still mostly a mystery that have left researchers and doctors scratching their, hopefully not inflamed, heads. I know what you're thinking. Katie, you can't count for shit! Those were only three deadly sins! How dare you! Well, don't you worry, we'll be back with more deadly sins when we return with Season 2 of Creature Feature. Haha, I got you with a cliffhanger! You'll just have to wait in anticipation to find out what the other deadly sins are. Wait, no, don't Google them! Spoilers! Anyways, that's right, this is the final episode of Season 1, but don't worry, we'll be back really soon with Season 2. Just to give you a little sneak peek, one of the sinners we'll discuss are birds who cheat on their partners in a way that is arrested development levels of messed up. And it's such a scientific enigma that researchers have said, quote, "It's a little bit of a black box what's actually happening inside the female, unfortunately." So join us soon for Season 2 of Creature Feature. So Katie, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
So you got anything to plug?
Yeah, I mean, you can check me out on Even More News, my podcast that I co-host with Cody Johnston, who's been on the show before, and check out our YouTube show, Some More News. I'm on the Twitter, you know, you can find me there. That's probably it. That's probably all I have to plug.
Yeah, Katie Stoll is the name. Katie Stoll.
That's right. Yeah. Don't you dare say K-A-T-I-E, because that's a beautiful name, but it's a different name.
Yeah, that's going to be me.
Did you ever think that you had a unique name?
Probably when I was a baby, and then after that, it's downhill from there.
Up until high school, I hadn't met another Katie.
Really?
And now you can throw a rock and hit five.
I knew another Katie in high school, and she'd punch me in the stomach.
Well, you should have pissed on her.
I know, she peed on her. Should have. So join us soon for Season 2. You can follow us on Twitter at Creature Feet Pod. It's feet as in a great feet, not feet as in stinky feet. You can follow us on Facebook and also check out our website, creaturefeaturepod.com. And you can find me on Twitter at Katie Golden. And also I would highly recommend you follow at ProBirdRights, which, you know, is totally me pretending to be a bird and not a bird pretending to be a human. Also, I'd like to thank the Space Cossacks for letting us use their excellent song, Exolumina.